Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding, and I'm your host, John Hansen, and we had a week off last week. I was on vacation in Hawaii, and I thought I would be able to get home and get the show up, but flew all night on Monday night, didn't get home till Tuesday. Of course, I was tired after being up all night, and ended up not getting the show up, but we got a new show for you today, and this is actually part three of our second anniversary. So this will be the last part. We had our, actually it was our 2.5 year anniversary. So we had three parts to it. And in this episode today, we are going to feature clips from interviews that we did with Jerry Branum, of course, one of our favorite guests here on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Jerry always has some great, great stories. We're also going to have clips from our interview with Franco Santoriello, my friend Glenn Kinnear from Chicago, John Lloyd, who was a top amateur competitor in the 1980s, Dale Ruplinger, recently interviewed, and we got quite a few clips with Jerry, as I said, also. So it's going to be a really, really good episode. So we got a little over an hour of clips from former interviews that we did to celebrate our second anniversary. So I hope you guys enjoy that. All right. And right off the bat, I want to mention that we are brought to you, of course, by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banut and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. So how is everybody doing out there? As I said, I just got back from Hawaii last week. It was absolutely beautiful. I went out there to visit with my parents, who usually go out there for 3 weeks every year. And they usually go out in January because their anniversary is January 30th. And this year they are celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary, if you can believe it. They got married in 1960, so I'm very lucky to have really, really great parents, and I wanted to go out and visit Hawaii. I've only been out there once, and it was back in, I think, 2001 when I competed the year after I tore my bicep, so it was not a good year for me, and I was only out there, I think, a couple of days, and I was competing, so I really couldn't enjoy it. So I wanted to go back out there, especially to visit my parents because they go out there every year, and I'm really, really glad I did. It was so beautiful. So if you've never been there, I went to Maui, which is a little smaller than the Big Island, of course, but so beautiful out there. Put that on your bucket list. That is definitely a place you want to go travel and visit one day. So it's absolutely beautiful. I hated to leave. And the weather was just great. Not that the weather's not great in Florida, but the weather is really perfect out there. It's not humid. It's not too hot. It's not cold. It's just perfect. And then they got the winds coming off the Pacific. It's just so beautiful. So anyways, I'm back and I'm back to my training, and my training is going really good. I'm leaner now than I've probably been in 8 months or so. I think last year I was kind of fat all year ever since I had my hernia surgery, which was in August, and I never really lost the weight. So now I'm getting leaner. My waist is down an inch already, so I'm really happy about that. So I'm getting the year started off right. I hope you guys are too. And speaking of that, I got that fitness challenge that started last Monday. On the 20th, I was actually writing up a nutrition and workout program for people while I was out in Hawaii because I got some more entries coming in that week. So I had to finish them all up and get them done before the 20th, which was the official start. And if anybody out there wants to still join, you can still do it. It's just you're like a week behind everyone else. because the official date for the ending of the fitness challenge, which is 12 weeks, is April 13th. So you'd have 11 weeks, but you could still do it if you want. I just got another entry in today, in fact. So if you want to enter, just get your entry form in. Just go to johnhansonfitness.com and click on the fitness challenge. And I'm getting emails today. I got a lot this weekend from the people who have joined, letting me know how their first week went. So that's pretty exciting. A lot of them are really made some great progress in only 1 week, and they're all real motivated. So that's a lot of fun. I'm glad I did this, and I'm glad I'm getting back into more of the coaching and helping people get in shape. And of course, I'm also helping people get ready for competitions too. So if that's a goal of yours, if that's something you want to do or something you have been doing, I hope you'll use me as your coach, and you can contact me again on johnhansonfitness.com. It's all on there. I got all the programs on there. So get on that. Make this year a good year. This is a brand new decade, brand new year, and I'm psyched for the new year, and I hope you are too. Well, I've been doing some interviews too about bodybuilding history. Everybody calls me a bodybuilding historian now, I think because of this podcast and just for the fact that I know a lot about bodybuilding history because I read all those magazines when I was younger. But I was on Dave Palumbo's show at the beginning of the year, and we talked about Sergio and Arnold. So if you didn't see that, that got a lot of views. It's on YouTube if you want to check it out there under rxmuscle.com, I think, or RX Muscle's YouTube page. And I'm going to be doing another interview, I think, with Dave next week. So I'm not sure what we're going to talk about, but it'll be some kind of bodybuilding history. I'm also on another YouTube channel. It's called Desktop Bodybuilding. So check that out also. The guy's name is Xavier, a real nice young guy from Australia. And he contacted me a few weeks ago, and he wanted to do a series of interviews. These are kind of short interviews, like maybe 15 minutes, about some history of bodybuilding. So the first thing we talked about was not going too far back, like we do on this show. We talked about the 2001 Olympia, where Ronnie Coleman barely beat Jay Cutler, and Jay Cutler actually had him beat at the prejudging. So we talked about that. And then we recorded a few other subjects. We talked about the WBF, which was Vince McMahon's bodybuilding organization that he started in the early 90s. And we had quite a few other subjects. I think we recorded like three or four shows. So I think he's going to be putting one out every week. So check that out on YouTube under Desktop Bodybuilding if you want to check that out. And I got my seminar coming up. I want to mention that again. If you guys are interested in coming out to that, or if you know somebody that might be interested in coming out to that, it'll be out here in Tampa, Florida on March 21st and 22nd. So that's a Saturday, Sunday. It'll be a weekend seminar, 2 days, and it'll feature both classroom training, where we're going to go over all aspects of how to build muscle, the right way to build muscle, how to put together a training routine. We're going to talk about diet. We're going to talk about getting ripped and holding on to muscle, all kinds of subjects, overcoming weak points, how to analyze your physique, pretty much encompass everything I've learned in the last 40 years of training, with all my competitions that I've competed in and all my years of experience going from a skinny kid to a bulked up bodybuilder, and then learning how to compete as a bodybuilder. And then also training as I've gotten older. I'm now in my 50s and I'm still training really hard. And of course, you got to make adjustments for your age every decade. I've done this my whole life, and I'm going to start sharing that now with people. So this will be my first 2-day bodybuilding seminar. And again, it'll be March 21st, 22nd out in Tampa, Florida. So try to make plans to come out here. If you sign up before February 1st, which is this week, then you will get a discount on the price. So go to johnhansonfitness.com and check that out. And we're also going to be including training sessions as well. So after we do the lecture series in the first part of the day, the second part of the day after lunch, we're going to go into the gym and we're going to do training, and we're going to go over every body part and all the most important exercises. And I'm going to show you those one-on-one. So that's why we have to limit the class size to only 15 people. We can't do more than that, because if we do, then we won't be able to get one-on-one instruction for the seminar. So that is also on johnhansonfitness.com. So check that out. Oh, we got some bad news today. I just heard this a couple hours ago before I started this podcast. Kobe Bryant, the legendary basketball player from the LA Lakers, died in a helicopter crash at only 41 years old, and I think his daughter was on the helicopter with him. So that is just really tragic news. I'm sure everybody's in shock over that, but it just goes to show you how important it is to live every day to your fullest. And it just makes me personally feel like I'm glad I went out to Hawaii last week to spend it with my parents, who are really special to me, of course. I've got really great parents, and I got to finally go out there and celebrate that and take some time to go to Hawaii, which I've never been to. Every one of my family's been out there many times, but I've never been there. So yeah, just enjoy life, folks. I know sometimes life gets tough. Sometimes we go through difficult things and we have sometimes boring jobs or boring days, but every day is special, that's for sure. And the longer we're here, the more we should appreciate it. So that is really, really shocking news. So sorry to all those fans of Kobe Bryant and, of course, his family and friends. What terrible news. I'm sure the whole country is shocked by that because it was so shocking. At only 41, I think Kobe even won an Oscar last year at the Oscars, at the Academy Awards, because he was, I think he produced a film that was an animated film, and he won the Oscar for that. Man, tragic news, tragic news. Got a couple emails here. This one was from John Hartman, and this was about the second anniversary show, part one. And he said, "Hey, John, I'm sitting here drawing at work. I'm an engineer, and I'm listening to part one of your second anniversary show. I'm about to bust a gut listening to the stories, especially the one about Gunnar Raspo from Phil Williams. I'm going to dig up his interview on your show and re-listen. Bodybuilding Legends podcast rules. Thanks for all the work you do on this, John Hartman." All right. Thank you, John. And I love that interview, too. That's why I had to put that in the anniversary show, because I love that. Phil is such a great storyteller. He's kind of a quiet guy. You wouldn't think he had such a great sense of humor, but he's really, really funny. I can't wait to talk to him again. I also, on the Apple podcast where we broadcast, because we're now available on Apple and Stitcher, but on the Apple podcast, I checked that out this week, and there were a couple new reviews. So if you guys like the show, please go on Apple Podcasts if you listen to it on Apple and leave a review. And the higher rating we get, the more reviews we get, the more, I think, the better it looks. So we got one here. It says, "Outstanding, 5 stars. John Hansen is a wonderful archivist for bodybuilding. The podcast is superb. John and his guests paint vivid pictures of bodybuilding's golden era. These stories help introduce us to interesting characters and champions. I look forward to these podcasts every week." And that was posted on January 8th of this year. So thank you very much. Another one, also 5 stars. It says, "Terrific show. I look forward to Legends every week. Funny, insightful, a little wistful for the good old days. Fantastic hearing the old voices and stories from the golden era. Thank you, John, for giving so many of our old heroes a platform to reminisce and dole out smart old school tips. All the best." And that was from Podcast Junkie 17. And that was also listed on January 8th. It was January 8th. That was Wednesday. So I must have been after people listened to the show on maybe Monday or Tuesday. And then this one was just posted the 23rd, which was just a couple days ago. It says, "Unleashing the Legends, 5 stars. John does a great job bringing out the best in his guests to provide the listeners with all the behind-the-scenes stories of bodybuilding's beginnings. This podcast is truly ear candy, if that were a thing. I love it." All right. Thank you very much, guys. So we are now rating at 4.7 stars on Apple Podcasts, and we have 105 ratings. So that's awesome. So keep those coming in if you could. I really would appreciate that. Before we get to our show today, I also want to mention our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services and ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number at 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, flalternativemeds.com. And if you mention that you heard their advertisement on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they will give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your order. All right, so that's it for our beginning. So to start off our clips for the anniversary show, part three of our second anniversary show, we are going to hear from Jerry Branham, always one of my favorite guests. And this was from season 7, episode 14, where we were talking about, you know, we've been doing this at the end of the year now, where we go back 30, 40, and 50 years. We don't talk about the year just past. We go back 30 years, 40 years, and 50 years. So, for example, 2019 just ended, so we just did our show with Jerry Branum, where we talked about 1969, which was 50 years ago, and then we talked on the next show about 1979, which was 40 years ago, and then we talked about 1989, which was 30 years ago. So in this clip, this was from a year ago, and we talked about the year 1968, and Jerry is talking about meeting Arnold for the first time, and this was at Vince's gym in the fall of 1968 when Arnold first moved to the United States. Here we go.
I watched Arnold evolve over the years, and you know, and people who knew him back in Europe told me that he was kind of the equivalent of an American person who kind of lives up in the hills, kind of backwards, you know, not sophisticated. And that's more or less, I found that to be true. The original Arnold, remember, he spoke broken English. And, you know, did I ever tell you the story about, you know, when Vince, when he first came to Vince's, what Vince said to him? Did I ever tell you that story?
Yeah, tell that story. I heard it before, but go ahead and tell it.
Well, what happened was this is how I met Arnold.
Okay.
I go, you know, remember, I got along well with Vince. You know, Vince was a funny guy. Either you hated him or you loved him. I loved him. I thought he was just an incredibly knowledgeable guy. To me, once you get to know him, he was hilariously funny. He really was. But anyway, I used to sit and talk to Vince after the workouts, and he said to me one day, he says, "Hey, Jerry, this guy Arnold Schmitzenbender is coming to." I said, "Who?" He said, some Europe. I said, wait a minute, Vince, you mean Arnold Schwarzenegger? He said, "Yeah, that's him." I said, "Vince, that guy's a sensation in Europe. He's already won like two, I think he's won two Miss Universe contests." I said, "He's like 21 years old, and he's gigantic. He's tremendous."
Yeah.
He's coming to the gym. He says, "Yeah." So sure enough, Arnold shows up a couple of hours later, and he walks right up to Vince, and he says, "I am Arnold Schwarzenegger, Miss Universe." And so Vince looks at his face, goes slowly down his body, back up to his face, and he says, "You look like just a big fat fuck to me." And I looked at Arnold, and I hadn't actually spoken to Arnold at this point, but yeah. Arnold's jaw dropped. He was like in shock.
Uh-huh.
So I immediately went up to him and I introduced myself. I wasn't even writing back then, you know. I just was a guy at the gym, you know. What was I? 18 years old, so. I said to him, "Listen, Arnold, first of all, let me tell you, you know, Vince, it was out of range. Vince couldn't hear me say this. I said, I have seen you in the magazines. I think you're sensational. I said, you're only a little bit older than me, and look at you. You're twice my size." I said, said you are a prodigy. I said, you know, you could do anything in bodybuilding. I said, let me explain Vince. Vince has a little procedure. Anyone who first joins his gym, he insults them. And it depends on, and depending on their reaction, he likes them or he doesn't. In other words, if you don't react, if you let him insult you and kind of laugh it off, he likes you.
Yeah.
Now, I was told about him, so when he insulted me, just like he insulted you, he insulted me also, I laughed, and that's why we get along. So don't take it personal. He does this to everybody. It's just his personality.
Right.
So he liked that. He calmed down, and he was okay, you know, and this and that.
Yeah.
The really interesting part of the story, Arnold and I became friends. I remember he was on a very low, Joe Weider had brought him over. He was giving him like just barely enough money to live on. And I remember the first car he leased him was a Volkswagen Beetle, I remember.
Right.
And Arnold used to drive in the Beetle. And Arnold, remember, Arnold was a big guy. I was maybe 190. I wasn't nearly as big as him. But when we sat in that car, it was like being in a sardine can because we were like crunched in there, you know?
Right.
But so we became good friends. Arnold, after the workout, there was a supermarket across the street from Vince's. And Arnold would walk over there. Arnold would actually buy my groceries.
Really?
And,
wow.
Yeah, you know, we got to be good friends. And one time I asked him, I said, "Arnold, wasn't there a contest you competed in recently?" He says, "Yeah, the Miss Universe. You know, that's the first American show." I said, "What happened?" He says, "I'll show you what happened." So it turns out that Weider had actually rented him an apartment only about two blocks away from Vince, right off Ventura Boulevard there in Studio City. So I walked over to Arnold's apartment, and as soon as I opened the door, the first thing I see is a guy running around the room wearing boxer shorts. You know, and like Arnold acted like he wasn't there. So I whispered to Arnold, I said, "Who is that guy?" He says, "That's Paul Graham." He says, he's a wrestler. He's a friend of mine. He says he goes under the name Lord Paul. Now, Paul Richard, now think about it. Later on, became the IFBB honcho of all of Australia.
Right,
the head of the
right.
IFBB in Australia. This is the same Paul Graham. He never acknowledged me the whole time I was sitting in. He never said hello, never tried to introduce him. He just walked around in the boxer shorts.
Unbelievable.
So Arnold sits me down and he says, let me show you the medallion that all the competitors had to wear at this show in Miami Beach where Frank Zane beat me. And so he hands me this kind of big medallion, and I look at it, and as clear as day, there's Frank Zane in the double arm. He didn't even try and disguise his face. It was Frank Zane on the medallion.
On the
right?
medallion, unbelievable.
He says, also this, and he hands me a program from the show. And on the cover of the program is Frank Zane. He says, what does it look like to you? He says, of course it was fixed, he goes. He said, I'm much bigger than Frank Zane, you know?
Right.
So, see, Arnold, it looks pretty bad, I'll tell you. I mean, to have a competitor, you know, be on the medallions that all the guys wearing on the program, I have to admit, it doesn't look good.
Right.
So, but what happened was, when the magazines came out about 2 months later, you know, it took a little time back then. There was no internet. This is 1968 when the magazines did come out. And I saw the photos. I looked at Arnold. Arnold, sure enough, was much bigger than Zane, but he was very pasty, had no tan.
Right.
And he was very bulky. And Zane was tan and cut and, you know, much smaller but much more finished.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, well, Zane actually deserved to win, you know. Now, the interesting part of the story is that many, many years later, I mean, this is like, I think it was Arnold, I think it might have been when he was the governor of California. My phone rings, and I hear a voice. He says, hello, Jerry, this is Arnold. And I said, oh, God. I said, you know, I figured somebody's playing a joke on me. Arnold. I said, okay, who is this? I said, I have to admit, you got his voice down really good. He said, no, this is really Arnold. He says, I got your number from John Bailey. You know, he wanted to ask me, he was going to give a speech and he wanted to talk about nutrition, and he wanted to know when protein powders were first introduced. So we chatted a little bit, you know, I said, I'm going to test you. I said, only the real Arnold would know this. I said, when Arnold mixed his protein drinks, he would add an unusual ingredient to it. Only Arnold would know this. What did he add? He says, oh, you're talking about the schnapps. It really is you, Arnold. Arnold used to add a little bit of whiskey to it.
Oh, really?
He thought that would cause the, you know, because he knew that alcohol is absorbed very rapidly.
Yeah.
So he thought the alcohol would pull the protein in his body faster. That was an early form of bro science.
Right.
But looking at Arnold, what are you going to argue with the guy?
Right. It worked.
It worked. So I said to him, Arnold, I said, do you remember that conversation we had many years ago where you told me that you should have beaten Frank Zane and you showed me the pro? And he says, no, the truth of the matter is Frank Zane was the better man that night and he deserved to win.
Wow.
And I said, oh, that's big of you to say that, Arnold. I mean, you know, he says, no, it was the truth.
Yeah.
He said, I came over a little raw. You know, it was a different level of competition here. You had to be harder, and I made some changes, and I, you know the rest, he goes. I said, yeah. You know, that was that story, you know.
Yeah. All right, and now in this tribute, we're hearing from Jerry Branum again. This was our Franco Colombo tribute. Of course, Franco Colombo passed away last August, right after his birthday, actually, out in Sardinia, Italy. His hometown is where he grew up, and it was a drowning incident. They think Franco might have had a heart attack. So we did a whole show with Jerry about Franco Colombo, and this was a really funny story where Jerry talked about Arnold and Franco training at Gold's Gym, and Arnold actually got into a fight at the gym.
Arnold, it was, again, the original Gold's Gym. Arnold Franco were training there one night, and it was this kind of nutty guy, and you know, fancied himself a boxer, right? And this boxer and Arnold got in an argument about, so stupid, the argument, I'll never forget it. It was about, you remember the bodybuilder Rick Wayne, you know, the famous bodybuilder. The argument was about whether Rick Wayne took a lot of steroids. This boxer, who never even knew Rick Wayne, never even met him, was saying that Rick Wayne was all steroids. His whole physique was steroids. And Arnold was a good friend of Rick Wayne. And he says, no. He says, you know, Rick didn't hardly use that. He didn't use that much steroids. So, you know, the discussion got more and more heated. And I'm looking at this, and I couldn't believe it. They started to get into a fight.
Really?
Right? Yeah. And I remember, the guy's trying to hit Arnold, and Arnold's, like, ducking. And he lands a couple of punches on Arnold, and then he puts Arnold in a headlock. And in the meantime, Franco is standing there, and Franco's yelling out, "Kill him, Arnold! Kill him! Kill him!" Franco jump in. He doesn't try and help Arnold. He's just yelling, "Kill him, Arnold! Kill him!" And Arnold gets the guy in the headlock. And then what I saw next absolutely stunned me. The guy bit Arnold. Bit Arnold as Arnold had him in the Arnold had him in the headlock. You know, he bites him. You know, and I think Dan Howard was the manager of Golds that time. You know, he sees the ruckus. He runs over, breaks it up, right? He breaks up the fight. And so, the guy's standing there. He's screaming how he's going to beat the hell out of Arnold. He says, I want you to show up in the boxing. They used to have a boxing gym about a mile away in Santa Monica. He says, "You show up in the boxing gym, I'm going to beat the hell out of you with all your muscles. I'm going to knock you out, blah, blah, blah." So Arnold says in a very calm voice, he says, "Why wait?" He says, "Why don't we just go in the alley right now?" and sure enough, the guy just keeps on. Instead of answering, he keeps yelling, walks away.
Right, right. He
basically chickened out. Because Arnold, let's go in the alley right now. And the guy's want to go. You know. So luckily, the fight that Arnold took was only Dan Howard broke it up faster, but Arnold wasn't really injured.
Yeah.
He actually was a nutcase. Unfortunately, he died about within a year or two of a drug overdose. I think he was on drugs that night. I mean, it made no sense.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, even as a kid, I was looking, what a stupid reason to get in a fight with a Rick Wayne. You got to be kidding me.
Right.
You know? I mean, you could never get – if somebody said to me, if I knew Rick Wayne well enough and they said, "Well, Rick Wayne," I'd say, "Well, he didn't." And the guy started yelling. I said, "Well, you walk up to your opinion." I'd walk away. I'm not going to fight the guy.
Right.
Believe me, what? I mean, if you don't even know the man, you want to say he took a lot of steroids.
Yeah.
Believe me, what? I mean, I can't change your beliefs, but it's not worth fighting over.
Yeah.
You know? But remember, Arnold didn't start the fight. This crazy guy did.
Yeah.
But I can still remember seeing Franco. It's like, "Get him, Arnold! Get him!"
I thought you said Franco was going to jump in because he was a boxer, so...
That's what I thought. I said, uh-oh. Because Franco was standing like a foot away. I'm thinking, if Franco jumps in, this guy's toast.
Right.
Because Franco, you know, this guy thinks he's a boxer. Franco really was a boxer.
Right.
And I saw Franco punch him. Franco still had the speed. He knew how to punch. This guy would have been knocked out, you know, even though this guy was about 6'2". It's about, a little taller than Arnold. Franco would have knocked him out with probably one or two punches.
Yeah.
He's just lucky that Franco, didn't jump. I guess he figured Arnold could handle him. Because Arnold told me when he was living in Germany, he used to have used to get in a lot of bar fights.
Yeah.
So Franco was with him a couple of times. So I guess Franco figured that Arnold could handle himself.
Right. That's a great story. All right, and continuing our show, now we're going to hear from Franco Santoriello. Franco was a really interesting guest. Of course, if you followed bodybuilding in the 1980s, you remember Franco Santoriello because he was a great teenage champion. I think he won 4 national teenage titles, and then he was a really great amateur bodybuilder. He competed and he won, I believe, the nationals in 1989 when Troy Zuccolato won the overall. Franco won his class and then got his pro card, but what we didn't know about Franco back then, and that what Franco revealed in this interview, was that he was a drug addict, and he was actually addicted to heroin during his whole bodybuilding career, and then he actually spent some time in jail because of his drug addiction. So this was from Season 7, Episode 10, where we talked to Franco Santoriello.
When I went in the men's, see, I was too tall as a middleweight. I took a 4th. I took a year off of training. This was kind of my MO during my career. I would work out for a year or two, quit working out for a year. I mean, I was on and off. I wasn't never really consistent because I don't know if you know, but I had a severe drug problem.
No,
and
I didn't
that
know.
Got in the way of my physique. Yeah, a lot of people don't know a lot about me, but it's all in my book.
Okay.
It's all in my book. That's why, I mean, if you know my physique and you watch me in my career, I was rising, and then it kind of just leveled off and then I dropped. Well, I had the potential, and I think you could vouch for this. If I had a state, if I wasn't a drug addict, and I'll tell you, I'm going to be straight up and honest with you right now. People mm-hmm. always ask me, did you do steroids? Well, of course I did steroids.
Yeah.
But you know what? I never did a lot of steroids. I did very tiny bit of steroids. Never mm-hmm. touched GH. My physique was built on hard work. I'll tell you, if you could ask John Perillo himself, I'm sure you know that name.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Perillo will tell you, and he'll tell anybody that asks him, that the person that he's seen that trained the hardest ever was Franco Santrell. I made mm-hmm. sure that when I trained harder than anybody. And I do that in everything in my life. I work very hard at what I do. And I have incredible genetics. So my physique was built on genetics, hard work, and the Perillo principles. I never took cybergenics, just to get that out there. People, the cybergenics guy, that was nothing but a big lie. I think everybody knows that anyways.
Yeah.
So my life, my career, you know, as you probably know, I could have been, I should have been Mr. Olympia. I had that genetics to be mm-hmm. that bodybuilder, to be Mr. Olympia. But that was really, in my heart, I know that was never my plan and for my future. Because if I had done that and I had done the amount of drugs that I needed to get to that level, I would probably be dead right now, like a lot of other bodybuilders that did those copious amounts of drugs. Because, you know, I mean, you don't know much about me, but my father died from, he died. I have heart disease. I had a heart attack at 44 years old.
Oh, really?
My heart probably couldn't have handled all those drugs. But that's okay, because the narcotics, that's why I didn't make it, because narcotics, I mean, during my career, I would train, I would take a year. It wasn't nothing for me to take a year or two off. In fact, before I became a pro, I had a 2-year break. Didn't work out. That's how the cybergenics got that before picture, because it was during my 2 year of not training.
Uh-huh.
I was in the worst shape of my life. And in 2 years, I got my pro card. You know what I mean? I mean, that was just the genetics and the freakazoid stuff that I was.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of say the narcotics almost, because that's why I never made it, because of the narcotics. Finally, my career had to take, it stopped, and then it just dropped, because mm-hmm. I got addicted to heroin, and that was
the end
of my career.
Wow.
People don't know about me, and that's, I have an amazing story, I'm telling you. The book, I have a book, it's called Before and After.
Yeah.
I named the book Before and After, and if you look at the cover of the book, it's got my mugshot. I don't know if you know this, but I spent 3 years in prison.
No, I didn't know that either.
Dude, you're finding out a whole lot about Franco.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
I just knew about your
bodybuilding
career. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that was my life. So, in 2014, I got arrested for drugs. Okay. I was doctor shopping, copious. I was going to different doctors and having them write me scripts. At the end of my life, right before I got locked up, I'll tell you this, I was unemployable, homeless, and suicidal. That was right before. Then I got locked up in the prison. But I named my book if you look at my book cover, at the top of the picture is my mugshot, and that was before Christ.
All right, now in this clip, while we're continuing with Franco Santoriello, where he talks about competing as a teenager and winning the Teenage Mr. USA, where he beat Sean Ray.
When I moved to New Jersey, I went on to win the Teenage New Jersey.
Okay.
And then I set my sights. I said, okay, I want to go in the Teenage USA.
Okay.
Up, it was coming around. I was a lightweight. So I said, okay, I'm going to do this show. And I went out to the show. And I actually had my uncle sponsor me because, you know, I was down in Georgia. I lived in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I went down to that show and I won my weight class. And I met a gentleman there. Actually, I had met a gentleman. The reason why I really got pumped up about the show is I met a gentleman. He actually, Mr. Luzewick, you know that name?
Sure. Yeah. Luzewick from California.
Okay. Yep. Yep. Luzewick, we met before the Teen USA. He was, at that time, he was just getting started. He was scouting out talent.
Mm-hmm.
We met in a diner and I told him I wanted to go into the Teen USA. And he said, he looked at me, he goes, well, you know, you're probably going to get smoked. And I'm like, what? You know what I mean? He just pissed me off.
Right.
He said I wasn't big enough.
Yeah.
He just pissed me off. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go in it and I'm going to win it. You know, and the funny thing was, is Mr. Zwick, he kept in touch with me as I was training for the show. And of course they were there. The Zwick team was there with the cameras. He was running the video stuff back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I won the Team USA. And that was my thing. I was going to do the USA and go home. And that was it for me. But Mr. Zwick said, hey, well, how would you like to come out to California next week and go in the Team Nationals? I'm like, yeah, with what? I ain't got a dime. You know what I mean? I spent all my money getting ready for this show.
Yeah.
Mr. Zwick flew me out there, and we that's how our relationship started. Oh, and they threw me out there, and I went to the team nationals, and I won the team nationals. And then after that, I said, okay, well, I mean, I only won my weight class because I was a lightweight. Right. You know, right. I wasn't big enough to win the overall. So I said, all right, next year I'm going to go back and hit the Team USA Nationals again because I want to win the overall titles.
Right.
And I did. I trained all year long. I put some weight on. I got up, you know, went up to a middleweight class. I remember I competed against Mr. Robinson, Eddie Robinson in the Team USA.
Yeah.
He won the light heavyweight. I won the middleweight class. Yeah, now you're going to hear a crazy story. You're going to love this. After I won the Team USA, okay, this is my genetics, okay?
Okay.
I won the Team USA. I beat Mr. Robinson. What a great physique he has. Man, that's a real legend of bodybuilding right there. I love that guy, man. We used to, you know, hassle each other in the magazines, but, man, that guy's a great guy. I really like Eddie Robinson.
Yeah.
I beat him in the Team USA. He went on later on and beat me, whooped my little butt, but that's all fun. So I had, like, I think it was like 14 weeks away or 12 weeks away. I don't know how long it was. To the team nationals.
Okay.
I said, okay, I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home and I'm going to take a couple of days off and I'm going to, you know, start training and I'm going to go to the team nationals and I'm going to win that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my 2 days off turned into 8 weeks. I didn't train for 8 weeks.
Wow. And how long of a break was it between the USA and the nationals?
It was like, I remember that I hadn't worked out for 8 weeks and it was like 6 weeks to the team nationals.
Okay.
Okay. I didn't work out because I lived on the Jersey Shore, brother, and I was partying. I was going to the clubs. I was Mr. Teenage USA. I got VIP treatment. I was running around, partying my butt off with my brother. It was 8 weeks of alcohol and drugs and women. Right. That was my life back then.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I ain't worked out in 8 weeks. So could you imagine what happened to my physique?
Right.
Okay. I wasn't eating. I wasn't training. I lost my mass.
Mm.
Now, Mr. Zwick, he's now kind of like helping me out, sponsoring me, helping me out with supplements and some food money and stuff. And he's calling me every week, asking me how my progress is going. And I'm lying to him, man. I'm like, yeah, it's going great. It's good. Because in my back of my mind, I'm like, yeah, I got time to get ready. I can do this.
Right.
Well, when he called me, it was like six and a half weeks out. He called me and he said, hey, Franco, how's it looking? And I started crying. He's like, why are you crying? I said, man, I blew it. He goes, what are you talking about? And I told him the truth. I said, man, I haven't worked out in 8 weeks. And there's no way in physical world I could come back and win this national show. There's no way possible. He goes, really? He goes, wow, you've been lying to me. I go, yeah, I've been lying to you. I'm sorry, Mr. Wuzwick, but you know who I had to go against? Sean Ray.
Sean Ray, right.
That was my middleweight competitor in my class. So this is how crazy my genetics was. So he hangs up the phone. He calls me back. He goes, listen, I'm putting you on a plane. You're flying to Cincinnati, and this guy, Mr. John Perot, is going to pick you up.
Hmm.
That's what happened. That's how I met John Perot.
I fly
to Cincinnati. John trains me, eats me, stuffs me full of supplements, trains my butt off 3 times a day. 6 weeks later, I beat Sean Ray at Team Nationals after not working out for 8 weeks.
Wow.
Is that crazy?
That's crazy.
Beat one of the greatest bodybuilders ever.
Yeah. All right, now we go to season 7, episode 21, and I got to talk to one of my idols that when I grew up with. His name was Glenn Kinnear, and Glenn was a great bodybuilder from Chicago. He was about, I think, 3 or 4 years older than me. So when I was a teenager, I always looked up to Glenn because he actually trained at my gym, which was called Hammer's Gym out in Chicago Ridge, Illinois. I got to see Glenn compete when I was a teenager. I really admired his work ethic and his physique, of course. Really loved bodybuilding just like I did. Glenn actually went on to win the Mr. America title in 1986, which was probably the highlight of his career. He also won the Mr. World that year. So on this clip, me and Glenn go down memory lane and we talk about Tim Belknap, who was from the Chicago area. He was from Rockford, Illinois. And Tim competed against Glenn. So Glenn talks about Tim in this clip and about how Tim just blew past everybody to eventually win the Mr. America title in 1981. Hey, you also competed against a guy who was a real freak, and a lot of people may not know his name, but it was Tim Belknap back in the day. Tim went on to win the Mr. America back in 81, but we saw him when he was coming up, going into Junior Illinois, and then the Mr. Illinois, and then the Mr. Midwest. Talk a little bit about Tim, because you competed against him when he wasn't so good, right? And then you competed with him when he started really getting good, because he got real good real fast, didn't he?
Yeah, correct. Like you said, Tim was known as the crazy man, hot-headed.
Yeah.
We competed against each other at a young age, but he was never a concern of mine. I was always able to beat Tim.
Yeah.
And, you know, I never worried much about him. So then back in the day, me and my buddy Joe Schroeder, we went up, we took a ride to Kentucky. I wanted to compete in a contest out there. And I don't even recall the name of the show. I showed up over there and I was in, you know, contest shape and hoping to get a trophy, but just basically having a vacation and fun.
Yeah.
That's how much I like to compete. And here comes Tim. Now, this was the first time I seen Tim very big. I thought, oh my God, I don't know how somebody can get that big and thick and full as quick as he did.
Yeah.
I know he's diabetic. And I'm sure, you know, maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know how the chemistry works, but
right.
After competing that day with Tim, here I wind up taking a fifth place, and Tim took a sixth.
And wow, okay.
He was so upset, but looking at him, the potential was there. I thought, man, if he just keeps getting cut, I mean, he had beautiful shape. He was super big. And I thought that's all he's got to do is, you know, get cut. Sure enough, he went into a couple shows prior to the Mr. America in 81.
Mm-hmm.
Every show got a little more cut.
Yeah,
Mr. Illinois, then the Mr. Midwest. And then he shows up at the Mr. America as, I think at that point it was weight class.
Light heavy.
And
yeah.
He was a bit heavy. And here our buddy Lance Strayer was a heavyweight.
Right.
And Tim just so ripped, and I mean, shocker to Lance and everybody else that here Tim wins and Lance, you know, wins his class.
Yeah.
Eventually, they go on to, you know, both win the no, I don't know if Tim won the universe, but I know Lance did.
Yeah, Lance did, but Tim didn't.
Right, and because they seen what kind of jackass that Tim could be, I think he got folded myself. But you know, they both went on to turned professional and, you know, God bless. As crazy as Tim was, he was in Phoenix one time.
Uh-huh.
He was guest posing. I believe I might have been judging a contest at this point. And he wound up coming back to my gym and we wound up having lunch and hanging out. And
oh, really?
Huh. Just incredibly crazy that we were almost contest enemies. And now we're able to, you know, become friends. And, you know, I was happy that he was successful. And eventually, you know, couple years later, I go on to win the America myself also. It just took longer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a really cool story, you know. And I want to say, I believe Lee Labrada was at the Teenage Illinois, and he was, like, one of the smallest kids sitting in the corner, a couple years younger. He wasn't even ready to compete, but yet he was there. And then eventually, I believe it was his sister, married Samir Benute.
Yeah.
And they became buddies. And boy, the next couple of times I seen Lee, now Lee Labrada happens to be one of my favorite bodybuilders of all times.
Mm-hmm.
Just a beautiful physique. He didn't have to carry the mask. That wasn't his style, but he carried so much symmetry and damn near flawless. I'm a huge fan of Lee Labrada.
Now, you mentioned Tim was crazy, Belknap. What was he doing that was crazy? Because you competed with him before anybody really knew him.
Well, he would be one of those guys backstage, you know. He just believed he should win everything. You know, I want to say he might even smash a trophy or two along the way. and I could be wrong on that, but, you know, he was one of those guys that, you know, most of us, I think, learned maybe through competing that, you know, kill him with kindness.
Yeah.
Show some respect, raise your arm in victory. And it might help you the next contest.
Right, right. All right, now in this clip, Len and I talk about the great myth, Sergio Oliva, who was just incredible back in the day, one of the greatest bodybuilders ever. Some people consider him the best bodybuilder ever. Sergio was a Chicago cop in the Rogers Park area, and Glenn got to meet Sergio in person when he was just a teenager, and this is the story about that. Did you get to know Sergio Oliva pretty good? Because Sergio was also from Chicago like we were. And, of course, he's one of the myths. You know, he is the myth, and he's one of the biggest names in the sport. So we got a chance to see Sergio when he was at his best.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Sergio Oliva was the most impressed human being that I've ever seen.
Yeah, me too.
I've seen most of all the guys, you know, that you see in the books and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a quick story. Back when I worked on the railroad, I heard Sergio Oliva was a Chicago cop, and he was in that Rogers Park neighborhood.
Yeah.
So every day at lunchtime, I would come down off the railroad, and I'd walk up and down the street trying to find a bite to eat, and perhaps maybe someday I would see him.
Yeah.
And I seen a couple of police officers, and I thought, man, is that him? He, you know, because that cop looks pretty big. And so I finally, one day, I walked into a deli. I had just, gave up on hope to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
The deli I happened to walk into, I seen somebody that I didn't believe, you know, could ever look the way he looked.
Right.
He was sitting at a counter, and he
had
two big submarine sandwiches, a whole sack of four or five bananas, and two cans of Coca-Cola. And the minute I laid eyes on him, I knew exactly who he was. I had just walked up, probably right when I started competing, mm-hmm. and I introduced myself, and you know, I said, Sergio, it is such an honor to meet you. And I'm looking at his arms. I just couldn't believe what this man would look like. He was so in a Chicago police officer's uniform, so big in the right places and so small in the right places. I had came home from work 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon. And, you know, we'd be eating dinner as a family, sit on the couch, you know, and talk to my dad, you know. And I talked to my dad till 10 o'clock at night. And finally, after about 4 or 5 hours, my dad said, okay, enough about this guy. He did not want to hear it no more. And I'm trying to, you have never seen it. And then I wind up, you know, competing in all these teenage shows that were in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah.
More than the time that, you know, I would compete and get a trophy or win, Sergio would be handing out the trophies and guest posing. And
right.
So, and then I had to remind him, I'm like, I'm not sure if you remember who I am, but I walked in the deli one day and I met you there. Oh, yeah. You know, with his squeaky voice. Yeah, I remember. And then my buddy Joe Schroeder was from the north side, and he had trained at the gym where Sergio was several occasions.
Yeah.
But I just could not believe how impressive of a human being that he was.
I know.
They just, maybe on stage, yeah, there was, you know, better bodybuilders, classical guys like Zane, and even Labrada being a middleweight.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Arnold's the king. He had everything going.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you got some of these big guys that you see nowadays. But just in street clothes or in a officer uniform or walking into an auditorium to hand out trophies or standing up there guest posing.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody was more impressive to me.
All right, now we go to season 7, episode 34, where I talk to John Lloyd. John is the father of Boston Lloyd, and if you follow bodybuilding at all in today's social media atmosphere, Boston Lloyd, his son, is very, very popular because he openly talks about the steroids that he uses, and he's very, very honest about his opinions on everything about other bodybuilders and the top pros, condition, and all that stuff. So Boston's really a real, real popular guy. And many of you may not know this, but John Lloyd, his father, was a really great bodybuilder in the 1980s. So in this clip, John was also a gym owner, and he owned some Gold's Gyms out in the San Francisco area. But in this clip, we're going to talk about Bob Reese. Now, Bob Reese was a really massive bodybuilder from Wisconsin, and I think I got to see Bob compete a few times when he came over to Chicago to compete in the top regional level shows. So Bob went on to win the Mr. USA contest, I think sometime in the 1970s. And he always looked like a really big, thick, powerful guy. And John Lloyd talks about how unbelievably strong Bob Reese was in this clip right here. And you said Bob Reese was out there too? He was from Wisconsin originally, right?
Yeah, Bob was from Wisconsin, but he was out here. And, you know, he had, of course, Ed Connors, he had a knack. He would find these bodybuilders, and, you know, Ed had this mission, you know, to start the Gold's Gym franchise and licensee throughout the country. And he would hire these bodybuilders that wanted to go to work in a gym and offer them, because what he would do, Ed, was, you know, he offered people to, you know, work hard and be loyal to the gym and help with the, you know, getting new locations going. He would let us buy shares, percentages of the gym based on what he originally capitalized the gym. So you could actually become a pretty substantial partner after working. So that's what happened with me after I got my injury and ended in my career of, as far as bodybuilding ended in the mid-80s. I had decided, you know, I want to do this as a career, as far as, you know, I just love the gym and the passion and all that. And there was many people that actually Ed Connors influenced because of his generosity and of his position with the gym, the Gold's Gym name, got their launch as far as, you know, I could go on. Rick Stevenson with San Diego. That was all because from Ed, you know, there's a lot of guys that got their start that way in the gym business.
So the first Gold's Gym franchise then was right around that time, 1980, you said?
Actually, June 16th of 1980, we opened up the Gold's Gym in San Francisco. And so my second show, that weekend, June 14th, was the Western America. And I went in, I wasn't peaked, but I went in the show. I took second to heavyweight. And then the following Monday, we opened up. Yeah, Bob was there, and we were there. I was there for 4 years before I moved back down to Southern California.
Tell me a little bit about Bob Reese, because being from Chicago, I've seen him compete in some Midwest shows and stuff, you know, like the regional level shows. But I always remember him. He was a big, thick guy, big chest, big arms.
Now, John, that guy was a beast in the gym, but he had at least when I, the years I knew Bob, I mean, he must have put something together nutritionally structured for him to be able to get in the kind of condition he did to win that USA. But when I knew Bob, I mean, this guy was so powerful, it was scary. Some of the stuff he would do in the gym, and he was like on chocolate milk and donuts. I mean, the guy was unbelievable. You know, he'd scarf the food down, but he was sick. I mean, he would do what there's a couple of most phenomenal things that I've never seen, never will see it ever again. He would take 150 dumbbells. He'd warm up a little bit. He'd do dips with a 150 strap to his waist, kind of like guys do with their body weight.
Yeah.
And part of his tricep workout, he would take the 150s and he, you know, warm up with, you know, whatever, 80s and 100s, 120s. He would go to 150s and he would do a semi-strict, like you would do with a cambered bar as far as lying tricep extensions to the forehead. He would come down on a flat bench with the 150s and do like a tricep extension.
Holy shit.
No, it was like, it was beyond. And he'd come to the gym at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, no breakfast, whatever, you know, come in there, we'd open sick. And he would warm up with 315 on the bench. He would just do 10s and 12s with 495. Remember that, five plates? And we'd have that little sweet jingle at the top, you know, just like real controlled reps. And yeah, wow. Massive chest and big arms.
Yeah. I had no idea he was that powerful. I mean, like I said, I just remember seeing pictures of him in all those regional level, national level shows.
Yeah, Bob was very impressive in the gym.
All right, now we go to another clip with John Lloyd, and John talks about, I asked him to tell me some of the bodybuilders who he's seen come through his gym out in San Francisco, the Gold's Gym out there. And we talk about a lot of different bodybuilders here, including Boyer Coe, Gary Stridham, who John actually competed and only lost by 1.2 at the 1984 Mr. USA. We talk about Bronston Austin, and we also talk about Mike Mentzer. So here we go.
Anyway, so I got tied in with Boyer Coe back then, just because I was just this young guy in bodybuilding. Here's Boyer Coe, right? So he comes over, him and Wade are like great friends and stuff. So he actually worked with me like three different times down in Wayne's basement on the compulsories.
Oh, really? And, wow.
Yeah, I was treated to that, and he actually had a lot of good stuff that he showed me, a lot of good points. He brought up that the rod didn't really go over with me to that extent. So I was really thankful about that.
What did he show you? Do you remember? Like certain tips?
It was just, you know, he was showing me some stuff about, like, you know, the transitions of going from, you know, the compulsories, like, say, for instance, going from a lat spread to a double bicep, to a side chest, to a side tricep, but having the transitional flow in between,
yeah,
you know, with the arm coming out and kind of make it look more artistic,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And showed me a couple of things with my back posing, where I could do some variations and have one arm down and one arm up with the hand open, and he showed me some kind of cool stuff, you know, that I would never probably have done.
Wow, what a treat, huh? To be taught posing by Boyer.
Oh, it was. Yes.
Yeah, he's one of the most down-to-earth friendly guys I've ever interviewed. He was just so open and so friendly.
Oh,
and
such a sweet guy.
And very honest, too.
Oh, yeah, no, totally, completely honest and down-to-earth. Just just a bedrock nature. That guy's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. He's still doing good, too. He's older now, but he's still doing good.
Yeah, last time I saw him, unfortunately, was at Dennis's funeral.
Oh,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So what were some of the other guys you met around that time, John? Like you said, Stridham. Did you know Stridham at all? You competed with him in 84.
Gary, there was controversy that weekend if he should have been competing at all because of the South African.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't a citizen. And he was allowed to compete. But every time we talked that day, of course, and that night, and congratulated him and all that. It was a 1-point deal. You know, he got 4 points,
wow.
I got 3. But it was, you know, he was 222, I was 244.
Wow.
But I had a double breakfast like a dummy. I overspilled a little bit. I made up for it as the prejudging was concluded. It had us up there forever. And I knew I could feel it. I was getting sharper, losing some waters we were posing, but obviously it wasn't enough. But he was very friendly, very outgoing. And every time I ever saw Gary after that or talked with him, he's always been such a really sweet guy, you know,
mm-hmm.
real pleasant.
Yeah, you guys both had the good legs, because he had good legs even back then, right, in 84. He wasn't as good in 84 as he was in 86, but...
No, but I'll tell you, the thing with Gary, arms down, most muscular,
yeah,
he had me. Arms down, most muscular shots, he had me. But where I thought I could get the edge on him is because of my lats and his lack of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that could edge it, but I obviously was too spilled over, probably a little bit too much water in the beginning of the prejudging to make up for that. But nothing had taken from him because he had really a tremendous physique.
Did you remember Phil Williams from that show? The guy who won the overall.
I don't think I talked to Phil, but yeah, of course I remember him.
Yeah.
And then John, do you remember a guy named Bronson Austin?
Yeah, he was from the Illinois area too, so I saw him compete too.
So that Western America I told you about in the summer of '80, in the Bay Area, Bronson Austin's the one that won that overall.
And then he went to the America that year, right? He won the light heavyweight class.
He did.
Yeah. And then he got second to Johnny Fuller at the Universe.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, he had a great
Johnny
physique. Not that big, but really rock hard and great biceps.
Oh, yeah, and his abs were sick, too.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever heard that story, I guess. So he wins the Nationals in the light heavyweight class, and then he's on the American team, and he goes over to the Universe, and Johnny Fuller beats him from England. And so he doesn't get his pro card. So then in 81, they had a pro-am show. I think they were trying it for the first time, where they had amateurs and pros competing together. And he went in it, and I think he got like second or third in the pros, competing against the pros.
Yeah.
And they offered him a pro card, and he said, no, I'm going to do the Universe again. So he went and did the Universe again, and he turned it down. He never got his pro card after that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you got third. Right. I'm looking at it now. You got third place.
It was called
the Grand Prix World Cup. So Boyer won. Chris Dickerson got second. He got third. And Johnny Fuller, who beat him at the Universe, got fourth. And they offered him a pro card because he got third. And he turned it down. And then he went to the America that year. He got fourth. So he was done.
Ah. You missed out on it.
Yeah.
That stinks. Oh, man.
So who are some of the other guys you remember, John, around that time? Because that was a great time in bodybuilding, early 80s.
So do you want to hear a funny story about Mike Menzer?
Sure. Yeah, I love Mike Menzer stories.
All right. So, you know, Mike Menzer, you know that kind of that famous picture in front of Gold's Gym, John? It was shot in October of 80. It's got, you know, Lou Fringo's in the front. You got the Menzers. You got all these guys in front of.
Yeah.
It was the old Gold's location when it was in Santa Monica, right?
Yeah, the big group shot.
Right. So, you know, that was summer of 80. I just gotten into bodybuilding and started working for Gold's Gym in San Francisco. And we actually flew down for that picture. And it was kind of exciting weekend stuff. So there was a guy named Denny Malloy.
Yeah.
Denny Malloy was actually managing, co-manager with the gym that Ed ended up buying. That was that Diamond Gym. But anyway, so that weekend he was down there, and he was training. He was, never forget it, he was training laps with Mike and Ray.
Okay.
And they were doing heavy, you know, all the heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Heavy pull downs, weighted chins, heavy barbell rows, seated cable rows.
Uh-huh.
And I think, was Lyle Alzado also there? I think Lyle was also there. Anyway, heavy duty. So now fast forward. So we take the picture. So fast forward to the Northern California Championships in 1981.
Okay.
That Ed Connors hired Mike Menzer to guest pose.
All right.
And this is like March of 81. So this is like 6 months in between, right?
Okay.
So I don't know if you ever read, but they had a book to joke around, the muscle confusion principle, like get big, muscle confusion. And what they were touting was, and pushing was, like, all you need in the gym is 20 minutes. 20 minutes of balls to the walls, you know, forced reps, negative reps.
Yeah.
You know, and just hit it hard, leave it alone, and go to the next body part, right?
Yeah.
And they were doing really well with the sales of these books and this whole concept, because it's Mike Menzer, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he had the day after the show, he did a seminar in our gym, and he was pushing that whole concept. And I, you know, all these, of course, these kids and stuff like that, I never, you know, someone from my background and all that, you know, I know that how important it is to warm the muscle up to, you know, to graduate into these heavy weights. And it was really, to me, it was a very injurious method, of, especially to take a guy that, you know, is just maybe not so mature with the muscle mass and
mm-hmm.
trying to get into this heavy, intense, forced and negative reps without proper warmth, and you know, and then just hitting it that hard for like two or three sets, and that's it.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I questioned him. I said, but Mike, in all due respect, I just saw you guys, because we teach, you know, like four or five sets of different exercises per body part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, four to five exercises. And that, I saw you guys go through a whole workout similar to what, you know, everybody is pretty much the norm of how we train if we're really, you know, serious about putting on mass. And so what are you saying? Is this like a part of the whole spectrum, like just a certain like few weeks before a show or in the very off season? Could you explain like when, because it, obviously you don't train like this all the time.
Yeah.
And so he kind of did a qualification of it where, no, you can't always train this way. You know, you've got to go in cycles where you have different methods of your reps and sets and,
mm-hmm.
and graduating up in weights and all that. It's not always doing forced and negative type repetitions, but it was interesting that it was obviously for selling and all that, but you know, Mike, most of the people that we met in all those days of my days in the 70s and 80s, you know, were always really like, it seemed like they were down to earth and helpful. Now, Mike was one personality where I really felt that he was very condescending, and he didn't, you know, he was, you know, I don't think he treated people really that well.
Wow.
I don't know if it was an ego thing or whatever, but yeah, it always said then he had problems after that, as you know, with the Weider organization and all that. But it was very, very sad what ended up happening to him and his brother so young.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Especially very for sad. Someone who was such a big superstar in the 70s.
Oh yeah, they went so close together, it was just sick.
Yeah, yeah. How did he look when he guest posed?
Oh, he looks phenomenal.
Did he? Yeah.
He had that marbly muscle, just that, you know, even though his chest wasn't, you know, that huge, he had that Herculean shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, he was probably 80% that weekend, you know, of his norm, but he looked pretty phenomenal.
So that was after the 80 Olympia. Was he planning on retiring then, or was it still up in the air if he looked that good still?
Yeah, but John, I don't know. I can't remember how long his competitive career lasted after that, but isn't that when he took fifth and he had that whole problem with Weider after that?
Yeah, he took fifth at the 80 Olympia.
Yeah.
So he never competed after that.
Won. Mm-hmm. He thought he should have won.
Right.
And he actually got physical with Joe in the office in Woodland Hills.
Did he really? Wow.
He did. He was blackballed. He got blackballed.
No kidding. Wow. All right, now we're going to go to Season 7, Episode 45, which was a kind of a recent episode, where we talked to Dale Ruplinger, and Dale was the first winner of the Mr. USA title in the MPC. So Dale had a really incredible physique, especially for his weight. He competed as a middleweight when he was an amateur, and Mike Mentzer called him the man with the hollow bones because he looked so big, it wasn't possible that this guy could look as good as he did and only weigh 176 pounds. So in this part of the episode, Dale talks about how he got started in bodybuilding, and he was inspired by a book written by Franco Colombo.
It actually, on my 24th birthday, I was given a book, and it was called Winning Bodybuilding by Franco Colombo.
Oh, yeah.
And
his first
and
book.
It was a great book. And that night, I read the book from cover to cover, and every page that I turned, you know, I thought to myself, I can do this. You know, I really could do this. By the time I had gotten to the end of the book, I was convinced that I could do it. And, you know, sometimes in your life, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I was at a point in my life where I was ready, and the book convinced me by the way that Franco laid it out, from a beginner bodybuilder to an intermediate bodybuilder to advanced bodybuilder, the nutrition, how he set up the workouts, how he went from one exercise to another and why. Most things in life are just common sense. And, you know, the common sense told me that this was doable. And I came from a background where I started out in grade school. I started at a Catholic grade school. It was called St. Paul's in Davenport, Iowa. And every friend that I had in my life went to that school, and there were six of us, the kids, and going to a Catholic high school was going to be kind of cost prohibitive to my parents. So they thought that I'd have to go to the public school at that time. And I begged my dad, I begged him to let me go to the Catholic school, the Assumption, where all my friends are going to go. And they had a program at the school where you could clean classrooms after school and empty out trash cans, and it would help you pay for half of your tuition for the kids.
Oh, really?
That, you know, Yeah, but some kids who really didn't have the means to make it on their own. So I talked my dad in. I told him I'd do that, you know, if he'd pay the other half, if I could go to Assumption. And he agreed to that. So honestly, while I was cleaning classrooms and emptying trash cans, other kids were going out for sports. And there were a lot of sports, you know, I couldn't go out for because, well, I was cleaning school.
Right.
So I always told myself that, you know, I could be good at a sport if I had the opportunity. And finally, the senior year, my dad let me play football. He said, you don't have to do it anymore. Like, the team isn't already picked. senior year.
You're right.
I did play every game. I did play every game and that, but I still had that burning desire, and I found myself at 24, not having done it, not having tested myself or proven to myself that I could. And there was kind of this hole that, you know, I just really couldn't fill. And I thought that point and period in my life that had passed me by. But bodybuilding was a sport that all it took was me and the weights and some knowledge, and I could do it. So that's how I got started. And over the next 2 weeks, I told all my friends and family members, I told them that in 2 years I'd be Mr. Iowa, and someday I'd be Mr. America. And
wow,
I'd never lifted a weight at that point. I was riding Harleys and drinking beer at that point.
Oh, really? So, okay, yeah. I was going to ask you what you did after high school.
Yeah, so everybody laughed at me. Seriously, everybody laughed at me. But I put Franco's book underneath my arm, and the next Monday I headed down to the Davenport YMCA, and I started lifting, and, well, the rest is history.
All right, we got another clip here from Dale. I thought this was really, really interesting. Dale tore his bicep in the 1980s, and then he made his comeback into bodybuilding. Now, for those of you that don't know, tearing a bicep or tearing any muscle back then was really hard to fix. So Dale tore his bicep in the middle of his pro career, and then he had to get it fixed. And then he came back and looked bigger and better than ever. He actually competed. Now, you're talking about a guy who used to compete as a middleweight, which is 176 pounds. Dale went all the way up to where he was 230 on stage. Unbelievable. He shocked everyone at the 1986 Night of the Champions. So check this out. So what did you do in 84? Did you compete in the Olympia again?
No, I didn't. In 1984, I snapped my right bicep off my arm.
Oh, no way. How did that happen?
I was doing flies with some dumbbells, and it wasn't heavy flies either. I think I had 60s, and I just extended my right arm out just at the elbow, just a little bit too much, and I snapped the bicep off.
Ooh, wow.
And because there's been bodybuilders who have snapped that bicep off, and it was over. You know, it was their biceps never were the same. They curled back up. They shrunk up.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like crap, you know. And for me, that was a devastating blow.
Yeah,
that was a devastating blow. So when the doctor went in, he was going to go in. He says, I'm going to make a big S. I'm going to start on your forearm on the outside. I'm going to crisscross your elbow. And then on the inside of your bicep, I'm going to come up about 3 or 4 inches. That we're going to lay you open. We're going to find where the end of that tendon is. And then we're going to bring it back down, and we're going to tie it back down to your forearm and drill a hole in your forearm bone and fix it that way. I said, Doc, you don't need to do that. I said, Doc, I know exactly where that tendon is. I pointed right to the center of my inner elbow at that crease where you raise your arm up, right in the crease. And I says, it's right there. I know it's right there. And he says, you may think it's there, but I'm telling you, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to be there, Dale. I says, Doc, it's there. Don't make that big scar on my arm. I don't want that
whole huge S thing on my arm if you don't
have to. Right.
And then the last thing going in before I went under on the surgery is on the table. I says, Doc, promise me you're going to make that one incision. And if it's not there, you know, okay, I get it. But I know it's going to be there. And one of my friends from back home here, his nurse was one my friend's wife. And she was in the operating room, and he cut me there, and he goes, I'll be damned. He's right, it's there.
Wow.
And so they reattached it, and then it was 6 to 7 weeks in a sling, unmovable. And then it was walking my fingers up a ladder on a wall.
Yeah.
And then it was 2.5 pounds, and then it was 5 pounds. Then it was 10 pounds, then it was 15 pounds, then it was 20 pounds. And I worked my way back, and I worked my way up to doing 70-pound dumbbell curls.
Wow. Okay.
And I never took measurements. I never did. But a good friend of mine was getting married. I didn't want to go in a sweatsuit. And so I had a suit that was tailor-made for me. And he said, do you know what your measurements are? I says, no, I just know what my waist is. My waist is a 31. And he says, he had the tape measure around my right arm. I was standing with my arms straight down, cold at my side. And he says, you're going to want to know what this number is. I says, why? He says, it's 22 inches.
Wow. Holy cow. Unbelievable.
So I built my arms up to 22 inches.
Jeez.
And there was no curl back. My arm was as full as can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next competition was the Night of the Champions in New York City in 1985. Was it 85 or 86?
86, I think.
86. And so that was my first time back on stage, and I'd gone through hell.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. When I tore that bicep, I thought it was over for me.
Yeah.
And so mentally and physically, I went through a lot of brick walls.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, getting back on that stage, was good. You know, I came in at 2:30 at that competition.
Wow.
That was a house.
No kidding.
I had a 31.5-inch waist. I weighed 230 at 5'9". I had 22-inch arms. I had 32-inch thighs.
Wow.
I was big, and I was still cut.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned. Now, I might not have been cut like I was when I was 173.5.
Right.
But I guarantee you I was cut. And when I went out on that stage and I did my posing routine,
mm-hmm.
New Yorkers like big guys. They mm-hmm. love their big boys, man.
Right.
And the roar of the crowd went right through me. I mean,
wow.
I could feel my body vibrating. And I'm going to tell you, that was the best feeling I have ever had experienced because of what I had gone through.
Yeah.
And the roar of the crowd, I mean, I tell you, I wanted to cry.
Wow.
I wanted to run. I wanted to run and never stop. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was one of the greatest times of my life.
All right. And now to finish up the show, we're going to go back to Jerry Branum. And Jerry had some really funny stories. And again, this is going back to our anniversary show from last year, not the one we just did. So this was where we did our anniversary show about 1988. And me and Jerry got off topic, as we sometimes do, because he likes to talk and I love to listen. And we got into this topic about bodybuilders and drugs. And Jerry was talking about how in the old days, the 1970s, guys like Arnold and Franco and Frank Zane would not use drugs all the time. They would only use them for competitions. And Jerry talks about why this was such a great idea. And he also talks about how Arnold Schwarzenegger used steroids when he was competing.
Bodybuilders, you think that without drugs, they would look like they never touched a weight? You think their physiques are 100% drugs?
Yeah.
Is that what you say? Listen to yourself.
Right.
Listen to how stupid your head is.
Right, right.
And they say, I know it's all drugs. This man fucking like, all right, see you later. I'm not going to argue with that. It's kind of stupid.
That's great.
That's great. The truth of the matter, and I said this about, I said, I was a, you know, an average body. I didn't have great genetics myself. You have much better genetics than me and all that. But the point is that I could take the same drug program that Sean Roden or Phil Heath or Ronnie Coleman who's the guy, good friend of mine, just Phil, Jay Cutler,
yeah.
Any of these guys. I wouldn't look anything, or Arnold, forget it.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah.
I would. In fact, I saw guys use Arnold's program. I saw it back in the 60s. All the guys who trained Arnold was very forthcoming. It wasn't like the guys today. Right. Yeah. In secret. I'm not going to tell you.
Right.
But back then, he would tell them exactly what he used. He would give them his drugs. I was in Arnold's apartment when a bunch of guys lined up. I don't want to mention their names to embarrass them, but we've already talked about some of them. But some guys lined up, and Arnold, he had approval and injection, the same one he used to. And they dropped their pants, and he threw it in their butt like a dartboard. And I was sitting on the couch watching. And every time he did this, I said, "Oh my god!" So like, one of the guys was my training partner at the time. Each guy was lined up and got the dartboard. But my point is that. All of these guys, all the guys that trained with Arnold, they all use the same drugs.
Yeah.
And as you said earlier, they didn't use the drugs anything like the guys today. They got off the drugs after the show. But the point is, none of them responded to the drugs like Arnold. They never came close to looking like Arnold.
Yeah.
Other than Arnold, in those days, I'd say the guy who responded best to the drugs of all the guys was Danny Padilla. Danny Padilla, who had amazing, like I said, 30-day transformation from a little short guy who literally did look like he didn't train.
Yeah.
To a guy who was, to me, I don't know if you agree with this, one of the greatest short bodybuilders.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I saw him in shape right in front of me, and again, no weakness, no weak points. The only thing wrong with Danny was that he wasn't tall.
Tall, yeah.
I really think that I have a category I call uncrowned Mr. Olympians.
Mm-hmm.
There's several men I felt should have won. Like Flex Wheeler is one of them. Leah Brown is one of them. And Danny Padilla is definitely on that list. I think he should have won the Mr. Olympia. Because, you know, again, it relates to my standards of perfect symmetry, perfect aesthetics.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to look like Danny Padilla?
Yeah.
He wasn't overwhelmingly big where you'd say,
Yeah,
Oh, my dog just jumped up on me. Something against you, but he just has a great-looking physique, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the key. The guys years ago, I mean, you know, when they went to the beach, Frank Zane, even Arnold, people weren't freaked out over their they were just, I mean, they were amazed because you have to understand, we're talking the 60s and 70s, bodybuilders were as rare as pink flamingos. You know?
Yeah,
most people had no physiques, literally, So when they see a guy like Arnold walk down the beach, it was almost like this, I mean, looks on their face, it was almost as if a UFO had landed right there in the sand.
Right.
What the hell is this?
But you're saying because they were so aesthetically pleasing, they weren't like, people were freaked out about them, they were freaked out, but not grossed out by them.
Exactly. And you can see the look on the face of both men and women when they would look at Arnold. It wasn't they lived like, wow, look at this guy. How did he get like that? You know, the guys that could read their minds, they'd say, wow, why can't I look like that?
Yeah.
Babies?
Yeah.
You know, it was admiration, John. It wasn't disgust.
Yeah.
Like, like people today look at Phil Heath, maybe not Sean Roden, because he, you know, but some of the other guys,
right. All right, now in this last funny clip, Jerry talks about Frank Zane. Jerry used to live right down the hallway from Frank, and he talks about Frank Zane. He also talks again about Arnold and Franco Colombo, since he was friends with all these guys.
Wasn't he? Didn't look ready. I mean, the guy looked smooth. I mean, he looked small. I used to say to my, I didn't want to insult Frank, but I used to say, I'd look at him, I'd say, he's got a contest in 2 weeks. He looks like crap. How's he going to win?
Wow.
But, you know, then he kind of disappeared for a couple of days. And then you see him at the contest, and he was in 100% peak shape. They gave him the nickname the Chemist because of that.
Right.
They thought he had this secret ability to suddenly get in shape literally overnight. and that's the thing that always I told you the story about the me and Frank's trophies, right? Did I tell you that in a previous podcast?
No, I don't think so, no.
Oh, it's a kind of funny story. What happened was, like I said, I lived next door to Frank Zane. I believe it was, I think it was 1969 that year.
Okay.
And Frank, after about a year, he was going to move. And he had all the trophies he won were in his living room. You know, he had Miss Universe, Mr. International, all this and that. You know, of course, the Mr. America. It was that kind of that six-foot trophy, big trophy. And he said to me, he says, hey, Jerry, could you do me a favor? He says, could you hold my trophies for a couple of days while me and Christine, his wife, you know, we get settled in a new place? I said, sure, Frank. Remember, I was literally next door. It was easy to carry the trophies right
in.
So he kept, you know, I helped him. We carried all these trophies, put it in my living room, you know, and they're sitting there. And I was going to, at the time, I was going to Santa Monica College. And I remember there was a young girl, and she had missed a couple of classes. She asked me if I had notes for the classes that she missed. I said, yeah, I have them back at my place. You want to follow me over? And I'll give you the notes, you know. She said, sure. I didn't know this girl, you know.
Yeah.
I was just, you know, so she follows me over and, you know, I open the door.
And there's all the trophies.
So you walk in the bedroom, the apartment, the first thing you see is these, what, maybe 20, 30, 25 trophies.
Right.
All varying in size. You had the ornate Mr. International, looked like a sculpture. You had this 20-star. So she starts to read the, you know, the little plates on the phone. She's Mr. America, Mr. International, Mr. Universe. She goes, she says, are these your trophies? And I looked at her and said, it's my apartment, isn't it? And, you know, it looked like kind of feasible because I was still competing in those days. So I was in good shape. I was, you know, I was lean.
Yeah.
I had, you know, you could see that I worked out. There was no question. So she was awed, and she was actually almost afraid of me, you know, and she just, I gave her the notes and she literally ran out the door. But the funniest thing was, the funniest part, the thing related to that was the same year, I think it was, Arnold, Frank, and Frank Zane and Franco Colombo, they all wanted to practice their posing together. So they knew that I lived by myself, you know, and they said, Jerry, could we set up a posing light in your living room where we could practice the posing, right? And of course, I knew them all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I considered them friends. I said, sure, why not? You know, yeah. I mean, I'm at school most of the time. You know, and, you know, Frank could let himself in and they could practice, so... Sure enough, this time another student, you know, came over to my place, you know, right after school, and I put the key in the door. And the first thing she sees is Arnold Schwarzenegger, Franco Colombo, and Frank Zane all standing there in their posing trunks.
Right.
I don't remember whether they had oil on or not. But I remember she took one look at these three extremely muscular giant guys. Her eyes got very wide, and she just didn't say anything. She literally ran down the stairs and ran into.
Oh my god!
We all had a good laugh at that. I wish I had video in those days. That would have been a great video.
Oh yeah, that would have been classic. All right, that's it for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks again for listening. This was our second anniversary part three, so I hope you enjoyed all these clips as much as I did, not only for this week, but also the last two shows that we did. Thought it was really interesting looking back. Next week, we will be joined by Roger Schwab, another one of my favorite guests. Roger was a bodybuilding judge back in the 1970s, and he was actually the head judge at the Mr. Olympia when Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Lorimer were promoting the show in the late 70s and early 80s. So he's got a lot of great stories. We talk about some of the things he witnessed as a judge. We also talk about how women's bodybuilding started and how popular it got. And we also talked about Mike Mentzer, because Roger was a friend of Mike, and they were actually training partners, and Roger trained with him for several weeks before the 1980 Mr. Olympia contest. So that's going to be really cool to hear those stories. So that's it for the show. Again, I want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. Please go out and check out my website, which is johnhansonfitness.com. If you're looking for some coaching for this year, or you want to get in shape, you want a new diet, you want a new training program, check that out, johnhansonfitness.com. And also check out the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website, where we have all of our interviews and all of our podcasts. So check that out as well. We will see you guys next week with Roger Schwab. Take care, everybody.